This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A report came out this morning from NJ.com that Giancarlo is on the way back to New York and he will get consulted with team physician Dr. Christopher Ahmad. That was reported by both NJ Advanced Media and the New York Post. That Stanton's on his way back to New York, which has certainly caused more angst and concern considering the future right now of Giancarlo Stanton. Aaron Boone meeting the media about an hour and a half before they play a game. They're playing at 4 o'clock today, which is weird. But Aaron Boone speaking in Fort Myers, according to Brian Hoke, confirms Giancarlo is in New York. But, quote, the situation is personal in nature, and I'm going to leave it at that for now. That's all I can comment on that. So it could still be injury-related.
That's what I was going
to
ask.
But for Aaron to say, as of right now, I can't say much, but it's personal in nature. I mean, look, an injury is personal, so it's not a lie necessarily. But it does put a little cloud of doubt on what the heck he's doing in New York. Maybe it isn't related to the dueling tennis elbows.
The only thing I would say, and obviously who knows what personal nature it is, it's probably not for anybody to pick at and prod at, but if it was just simply injury-related and personal off of that, I think Aaron Boone's, I think unknowingly or not smartly opening up a can of worms of curiosity that doesn't need to be opened up. Like, as far as he knows, public perception is he's up there for injury. So if it's injury combined with personal nature, just keep it at injury. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I get you, man. I don't know. I don't know what to make.
It's got everybody thinking a million things is going on.
Yeah. Look, here's the bottom line with Giancarlo. First of all, hopefully everything's okay personally. Yeah. But from a baseball standpoint, until he starts resuming baseball activities, if you're a New York Yankee fan who loves Stanton for everything he's done in October, it is okay to be skeptical about when he's ever going to come back. The biggest issue with Giancarlo Stanton is availability. We know come October he'll hit. The question is, will he play? That's the biggest question around Giancarlo Stanton, really, since the moment he got here. So it's a developing situation, as they say.
I don't like this at all. Like, just reading this again and again, it's making me more uncomfortable. Because now what's popping in my head is, are the Yankees and Giancarlo in disagreement on how to handle his injury? And he's made the decision to come up to New York to look at something that otherwise they didn't want him coming up to look at?
Yeah.
Surgical or not? I don't know.
The real thing we got to figure out is what the heck The Rock did on SmackDown on Friday. Made no sense. He wants to take Cody Rhodes' soul? What is he, The Undertaker now? I didn't get it. Very confused.
If he wanted to take his soul, maybe be involved ahead of the Royal Rumble, not just parachute in now.
Nah, thank you, Sean. That's a cutting edge wrestling opinion by Sean Morash. You know what? I'm not in agreement. I do.
Just saying.
I'm going to tell you, let's say 6:12 towards the end of the program, how I would book the Cody Rhodes Rock situation. Because I've given this a lot of thought over the weekend. I even threw some ideas at both of my sons, and they both really love my booking plan.
And your son is a better booker than you, as we've learned.
Yes, he's a great wrestling booker. I think Tommy will like my booking, too. It's very creative.
I look forward to hearing it.
Thank you. Let's go to Sean in Norwood. Good afternoon, Sean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I just wanted to talk about Peraza. Volpe's rookie season, they put him out there, left him alone. had some bumps and bruises, but he ended up hitting 210. But it was the right thing to do. I thought it was the right thing to do. Why can't they do that with Peraza at third? The kid can pick it.
Yeah,
he's the best shortstop in the organization, which tells me he's going to play. He's going to be able to play defensively at third. He can run. We're trying to get more athletic and better defense. I guarantee he's going to hit better than 210.
I lean towards them doing that, but I'll try to answer your question on why they haven't. Oswald Peraza was a wildly considered prospect years ago. In fact, remember, he started playing in the postseason in 2022 when they finally abandoned IKF, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. But in 2023, he didn't perform.
He also entered spring training as the favorite to start and play every day.
And he lost the job.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if it was a real fair fight because it seemed like they leaned towards Anthony Volpe getting that job to begin with. But then he goes down to the minor leagues. He puts up pretty good numbers. And when he came up, he didn't hit. Last year, kind of the same thing. When he played, he didn't have the greatest year at AAA.
They also never let him play consistently enough.
I understand. And this is it for him because he's out of options. So, to me, I agree with Sean in that I already kind of know what Oswaldo Cabrera is. I think he's best as a super utility player who has a value on this team. DJ LeMahieu still mostly feels cooked. I'd love for Oswald Peraza, at only 25 years old, to just get a month. Go out there, play every day, and let's find out once and for all, what are you? So I'm not against that idea, but I do think if you look at his performance the last 2 years, that would explain why he hasn't been given great opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm going to keep coming back to Dominguez. Does a team with aspirations of being the favorite in their league have the stomach to take two rookies and play them every single day in that lineup of your nine spots?
Joe is in Milford, Connecticut. Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
I want to talk. We were talking in the office today about Dominguez. And, one of the guys in the office is saying, he reminds me of a Jose Canseco. All bat, no glove. And I said, that's true. But this guy looks as lost as an altar boy in a massage parlor. I don't understand how you can play Major League Baseball at center field and you can't. I mean, it's not the first time he's had an issue with fly balls.
I don't understand it. No, I'm telling you right now, and I said this earlier, I don't understand how somebody, now, in fairness to him, we haven't watched him enough in left field. Last year was brief, even this spring training, where it's very, very brief. But I don't understand how somebody who reportedly has played a decent center field can't play left field, which is why I refuse to believe it. I think he'll be an average left fielder. I can't imagine, Sean, he's going to be a butcher.
Glass half full. We could have caught him this weekend on his worst weekend of fielding, just like in that moment of the fifth inning was Aaron Judge's worst moment of defense in the outfield. Like, that's entirely plausible that just in those couple moments, he was having a bad weekend in the field.
Now, the one thing that Boone may have to consider is saying, all right, you're our center fielder and that's it. Now, let me explain what Boone has said on why he's not the center fielder. His answer was, well, on days where Trent Grisham is going to be in the lineup, because let's say I'm giving Judgy a DH day, his words, not mine, Grisham is a center fielder. Grisham is a really good defensive center fielder, and so he doesn't want to move Dominguez around unless you just accept, you know what? Dominguez is the center fielder, and I'm going to put a better defensive center fielder like Grisham and Bellinger in left field just to keep him comfortable.
Yes. If you're Trent Grisham, your job, probably fourth outfielder on this team, great. Your best defensive position is center field. But if you're in a spot just to keep the young center fielder you hope is your center fielder for a decade there, then go play left or right field if you're Grisham.
I think that's an option at some point. But I think right now, Aaron Boone's saying, I want my best defensive team out there.
It's an overthink.
It's not really an overthink. It's a basic think. You want your best defensive team out there.
Sometimes, for the best of a young player, just leave him in one spot. That's it.
They are. They're trying to make that one spot left.
And Grisham's probably a better left fielder than Dominguez anyway.
No, but Sean, they're trying to make the one spot left field. They're basically saying, like everything you just said about leave him in one spot, they want him to be a left fielder, and that's it. It's over. Done.
Doesn't it behoove this organization, center field, to have that lockdown?
No, it behooves them to have their best defensive outfield. Now, if Jason Dominguez, for whatever reason, and again, I'm not ready to declare this, can't play left field, but he can play center field in an average way, then sure, at some point you consider that. But your best option is Jason Dominguez just becoming a decent left fielder.
How many times are they going to jerk guys around and not understand? Sometimes guys aren't as versatile as you think. They screwed this up with Gleyber Torres. Miguel Andujar, they screwed this up. I know what you're saying.
What am I saying? I want you to tell me. I think we need to have a discussion about the Knicks in a nice, rational, sane way. So I want to ask a question, and it's not rhetorical because Tommy's answer may be very different than my answer. And I do promise you that I am being an IBO right now. I am not being a jerk. I'm not mocking Mikal Bridges, though I did do that on social media last night when I tweeted at Tommy my tweet of, I'm just watching the awesomeness of Mikal Bridges. You never responded to me. I felt very empty.
I'm not going to empower you because I know what you're doing.
What am I doing?
You're trolling me so that you get a rise out of me, so I'm not going to empower you when you do that.
Did you see that tweet last night?
I did see that, along with the other members of the coalition of Nick haters that were tweeting at me. I did, yes.
Well, I want to promise you this discussion, at least right now, is not about being a Nick hater.
IBO.
Let's go Knicks. What is the biggest issue facing the New York Knicks specifically? I'm going to give you my answer, and then I'm curious your answer. I think the biggest issue, the deepest issue, facing the New York Knicks is their two best players do not defend.
Yep.
Simple as that. Their two best players are defensive liabilities.
One much softer than the other, but yes.
In fact, if you go back to, man, I'm getting the games confused, the game that they won against Atlanta coming out of the break. It was against Atlanta, right?
No. Chicago.
Against Chicago, Chicago. I'm sorry. Atlanta was going into the break.
Yeah.
If you go back to the game against Chicago that they won, you saw Tom Thibodeau do something he's done numerous times, which is switch out offense for defense late in the game. And the guys he's switching out are Karl-Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson, which he's right to do. Because they're not good defenders. So when I look at, because I think one of the easy answers is, okay, what's the Knicks' biggest issue? They don't defend well enough. I mean, the facts back it up.
Right.
They don't defend well enough. Everybody knows that. I'm trying to dig deeper into the why. You know, I'm not going to just sit here and blame Mikal Bridges, though he deserves some of the blame. Or just blame OG Anunoby, even though he deserves some of the blame. Or talk about how much they miss Mitchell Robinson, which they do. Like, all that's fair. But I want to get deeper. And the deepest issue this team faces, not just now, but next year and the year after, is their two best players, and they are brilliant offensive players. They do not defend. They are hunted out defensively, which we saw yesterday.
They're the reason they climb back into a game with their scoring.
Of course, they're great.
But they're the reason why you lose the game versus great teams.
They don't. So, Tommy, do you share that being the biggest issue that faces the New York Knicks today and beyond?
There is definitely some truth to what you're saying. I wouldn't say it's the biggest issue, but I do think there's an obvious, you know, issue.
What is their biggest issue then? If you don't agree with that, totally fine. I'm curious in your opinion as a diehard Knicks fan who watches every game. I do respect that. What's their biggest issue?
They don't match up very well against teams like Oklahoma City, Boston, and Cleveland because of their inability to guard the three-pointer. Now, there's various reasons. Number one, for the Celtics, they stretch the floor. They have a big man that could shoot, and Cat can't defend the three. That's where you are, you know, what you're saying is right.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get out and guard the three-pointer, so KP could just knock down shots the entire time. And they are able to, I think without Mitch, guys are going backwards a little bit here, and they're not guarding the three-pointer. That's Mikal, and that is OG Anunoby. All right, those are specifics now, but yes, the two guys, the stars, don't defend well.
But
overall defense.
But you're right. So I think we all come back to the same place, which is they don't defend well enough. ESPN wrote this really good article where they went deep into the stats on how bad they are against good teams. Like, we all know if you just go to Basketball Reference or any NBA site that their defensive rating is 20th in the league, which is not good. But when you go deeper and you see how do they do against the top 10 offense, like the offenses you're going to face in the playoffs, they're the second worst team in the NBA.
Oof.
Like, that's where they fall. So the data backs up the fact that they don't defend well enough. And one thing I hear a lot, and I want to disagree with it respectfully, is because I think I even heard Boomer say this morning, and I just disagree with him, is, well, defense is all effort. Look, I think effort plays a big role in defense, but do you think the Knicks' inability to defend this year, the reason they're 29th against top 10 offenses, do you really think it's just effort? Like, I'll admit, did they come out flat in this Boston game on a Sunday afternoon?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And they've come out flat at times. But I don't know if I can just say, yeah, they're 29th in defense against top 10 offenses because they don't try. I don't know if I could say that.
No, sometimes you're just not good despite trying.
And specifically, right, the guys who aren't good,
right,
are the two incredibly gifted offensive players in Karl-Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson.
I don't think Jalen Brunson isn't not trying on defense. Do I think sometimes he leaves a little gas in the tank for the offensive end? Yes, but it's not an effort issue.
I don't think it's an effort issue.
You have five guys on the floor and two of them literally are just not good at something, but you can't take them off the floor entirely because they're the best at the other end of the floor.
Right.
And it's a real issue.
You can do that when you have a timeout in the final few seconds like they did in the Chicago game, and it worked out. Like when Mikal had that great block against Vukovic, those two guys weren't on the floor.
Yeah. It also, and this is where Mitch coming back is going to help, it's not really a great thing when on the defensive end, Cat forgets he's 7 feet tall too. You know what I mean?
Like,
that's where the rim protection comes in, what you miss with Mitch.
Here's where I was saying effort. Here's where the issue is, though, a little bit. A lot of these threes are wide open. So why are guys wide open? I brought up before, without the rim protection, guys like Mikal, guys like OG Anunoby are backing off, right, because there's penetration and it's allowing guys to be wide open from three. And in this modern-day NBA, everyone on the floor can knock down threes. This isn't 1995. Everybody could shoot three-pointers. So a lot of these threes are uncontested, and I think people will point to the effort, but I think it's a lack of, not that Mitchell Robinson's making up for 40 points. They're getting blown out in these games, but it will help with him coming back.
I'm raising my hand.
Go ahead.
Before I calm Knick fans down, because I promise I will, do you give me permission in a fair way? I will be so fair. To absolutely verbally destroy Mikal Bridges. Is that okay, or will it be personal?
God. No, you can.
Oh, I can.
You have that right as a sports talk radio host.
Thank you very much. And understand, even though I'm wearing a Brooklyn Nets sweatshirt, I am not saying this with any malice or callous or anger or bitterness.
The Nets still in the league.
I'm giving you an observation. I watched Mikal Bridges for a couple of years. He's better than this. And I didn't even love him as a Net. He's better than this. And I'll give you two things specifically he is better than that I don't see with the New York Knicks. And we could try to dive into the whys. He, fighting through screens, is weak and soft. And I don't get it. He didn't do that in Brooklyn. He didn't do that in Phoenix. He doesn't fight through screens well enough. And for a guy who's supposed to be this elite defender, and you certainly gave up enough picks thinking he was an elite defender, that kind of crap is unacceptable. That's number one. Number two, offensively, Mikal, I don't know if it's your streak. I don't know if it's the amount of games you played. Boy, you are afraid of contact. Mikal Bridges goes to the free throw line as often as I do. Why? Why is Mikal Bridges averaging the lowest amount of free throw attempts in his entire NBA career? Why? Why does he run away from contact? Why? So when I look at the inability to fight through screens, and I look at his lack of defense for the most part, like, I'll give him credit for that play at the end of the Chicago game. I just said it. I'll say it again. It was a great defensive play. It's not like he doesn't make them. But why on a nightly basis does he not fight through screens? Why? Why on a nightly basis is he afraid of contact? Why? And I guess I could spitball and say, maybe it's the consecutive game streak. Maybe he's played so much. Maybe he's tired. I don't know the answer, but the one thing I don't think anyone can argue with me on is those two criticisms of Mikal Bridges are true.
I wonder if there with Bridges now is like this, I hate using this term because it feels like overplayed, the alpha beta thing where in Brooklyn when he comes over from Phoenix, he's the man. In Phoenix, he's a young pro trying to, you know, make his way with another young pro and Devin Booker. And so I wonder if he gets here and he goes back to his Villanova days and he's just not the alpha in the room. And therefore, it leads to more tentativeness. He's afraid to make mistakes that ultimately lead to more mistakes. He's almost intimidated by osmosis by Brunson and Hart and those guys. Just throwing out a theory.
I will say Mikal in these big games or against elite teams doesn't make a big impact.
Why? He played in the finals
know,
with the Suns. Like, he's used to this. This isn't new for him.
I just felt like yesterday, and he's included in this, in that first quarter, they were all tentative. They all, like, literally themselves. Like, it was like it took till the bench to come in, Campaign, who has Goyuns, and Shamit to actually, like, loosen things up. And then in the third quarter, guys were being more aggressive.
But that's no excuse coming off the
I'm not making an excuse. I'm just making an observation. In that first quarter, they were not ready to play. They were non-competitive. And I think across the board, all five, except for maybe Josh Hart. Josh Hart always brings it. I didn't see the intensity in that first quarter that I want to see. And in the third quarter, I did. Now, you want to tell me Boston, who I do believe has an on and off switch. Maybe their off switch was on that during the third quarter. But Cat was attacking the basket.
Oh, no doubt, by the way. And I think that's why I could not.
They were still being aggressive in that third quarter. Look, and the bench was in the second quarter.
I give the Knicks credit. They made it a four-point game. And they took a game in which they were getting blown out and at least made you sweat for a second. But the Celtics flipped a switch.
Yeah, they're the only team in the league that can do that.
They played with their food, as you like to say. And their food started to fight back, and they're like, all right, enough of this crap. And they put you away. But I do really, and I mean this genuinely, because I think I've been pretty consistent whenever we've talked about this, the rare times we've talked about good basketball teams on this radio station, because we haven't had a lot of time.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to stand by something I said to you guys a year ago, in which I was the bad guy, or even a decade ago, in which I basically didn't get too excited about my own team. It is February 24th. We got to stop acting like three regular season games against the Boston Celtics mean a damn thing in the middle of May. It doesn't. We have to stop acting like a few regular season games against Cleveland in the middle of February mean a damn thing when it comes to May, because it doesn't, good or bad. So I get it. You see the flaws. I think we had a nice conversation on what those flaws are. But the one thing we got to pop out of our brain is the idea that because they've been blown out by the Celtics three times, they can't compete with them in the middle of May. And you want to know why I say that? Because a lot can change between now and May. A lot can change, starting on their end. How do we know the Celtics are getting there in the middle of May healthy? Sure. That's number one. Number two, the Boston Celtics have played more basketball than anybody over the last 3 years. How do we know they're not running out of gas when we get there in the middle of May? How do we know that? How do we not know that the chemistry, which I think is a small part, but it does take time in basketball, how do we not know that when we get to the middle of May and the Knicks win a hard-fought series against Cade Cunningham and the Detroit Pistons, they are in a more battle-tested, tougher team than the crap we saw yesterday afternoon? The one thing I am sick of, I'm sick of it when you're too giddy, I'm sick of it when you're too moping down, is to act like games in February mean a damn thing about April and May. It does not. So, Knicks fans, stop being losers, get your head out of the toilet, and don't give up on a season on February 24th, because right now the Celtics are better than you. They are. Well, guess what? You're not playing a best-of-seven series tomorrow. You're playing them in 2.5 months. So I'm not one. Even when my Nets swept the Heat, remember that? In 2014, that didn't even excite me.
It didn't matter.
Because I was like, what the hell does that mean? Or when you guys were beating your chest, slashed, oh, we were the best. I was like, yeah, you're the best in January. You're the best in February. What does that mean in April and May? And you guys saw what happened. You got hit by injuries. And what happened? You lost.
All right.
So I want to calm the Knicks fan down. I want to put my hands around your back and give you a massage and remind you, it's going to be okay.
Let's go Knicks.
Until it's not okay. Well, right now, it's okay.
That's where you throw in. So I applaud you being ultra positive, because on the station today, you've heard a lot of negativity.
I'm not being ultra positive. I reject that before you continue. Right. I'm being realistic, and I'm being the same guy I've been for 15 years when it comes to this crap. So don't paint me as being positive. I have no reason to be positive. I'm reminding you the same thing I've reminded everybody for years. It's February.
A lot can change. Here's what we do know. The Celtics finally have proven something. They went and won a finals. These Knicks, and now this new group of Knicks, have not proven a damn thing outside of being able to beat the Sixers in a first-round series. Evan, okay, you're right. If the Celtics get a few big injuries and run out of gas, the Knicks could hang in a second-round series. That sounds like that's the basis of your argument. Okay, you want to bring in the Knicks' chemistry issues. Put truth serum in you right now. You've seen this. You could say that February basketball doesn't matter. What's your confidence level at if you see the Knicks?
I'm not confident. What did I say I am?
But then I can't blame Knicks fans for feeling that way if you're not even confident trying to give the spin.
Watch this. Why'd they lose to the Pacers last year?
Attrition, injuries.
And you're not being sarcastic. You're being real, right?
Right.
Why'd the Knicks lose to the Pacers last year, Tommy?
Attrition.
I rest my case.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right, I rest my case.
There's a big difference between wishing and hoping, even though it sounds horrible, about Celtics injuries happening, which they could, and understanding that OG Anunoby got traded here with chronic issues. He ended up getting banged up. He was a big part of it. Yes, at the very end, Brunson breaks his hand. Yes, the Mitch, you know, tug from Embiid. Yes. The Knicks get run into the ground by their coach minute-wise, and we all acknowledge that contributed to the injuries.
Okay,
and the
let me counter that. Does Kristaps Porzingis have an injury history?
Yes.
Are you, like, super confident he's going to be healthy come the middle of May?
No, but I'm also super confident the Knicks can and lose to the Celtics without him.
Hold on. I'm asking you about the Celtics
now.
Yes,
okay. Start with Tatum and Brown.
No, I'm not done yet. I started with Porzingis. I'll start wherever the hell I want to start.
Okay.
Drew Holiday. Has he played a lot of basketball over the last few years?
Of course not.
How old is he? Of course not. He's played a ton of basketball over the last few years.
Yeah.
And how old is he? Is he getting up there in age?
He's got to be, what, 33?
He's got a little bit of an injury history. Okay. Number three, and this is where I'll rest my case before, you know, whatever. The Celtics have played a lot of basketball over the last few years. A lot. In fact, that basketball has extended to a later part of the calendar. Because if you go back to COVID times, when they were getting knocked out by the Nets in 2021, that first round was in May. So when you look at the calendar and the amount of minutes that these guys have played over the last 4.5 years, it's a lot. So I don't think it's crazy to say that the Celtic team we see in May may not be the same team you saw on a Sunday afternoon in the middle of February.
All right. So the big plan is just hope they're worn down by playing a lot of basketball.
I didn't say it's a plan. I said I don't believe in giving up or realizing, we're done in the middle of February when there's literally only 3 teams in the league that you've struggled against. If you take every other playoff team, like 2-seed through 6-seed, real playoff teams.
They played well versus Denver.
What's their record against all those teams? Does anybody know?
Their record is excellent if you take out OKC, Boston, and Cleveland.
Well,
their record is great either way, but those are the 3 teams.
I acknowledge that those 3 teams have looked head and shoulders above them.
And the
totally
Lakers
agree.
Blew them out at the Garden here a couple weeks ago, if you want to throw them, because they're a different team now with Luka.
I'm including the Lakers. If you include all the playoff teams, not the very top, they're 11-6 against those teams. So the idea that they just simply wilt against any good team is not true. They wilt against not the 5 best teams, the 3 best teams in the league.
Two of them are going to be in their way. Though.
One of them is in their way, and if they get past them, trust me, you won't be scared of the other one.
Now, here's where I got to step in.
Patriots and Steelers.
The Celtics are a wagon. They were great last year without KP. Their record was like excellent when he wasn't on the floor. That's just how good they are. So Boston is just on a different level right now, and I don't even know if OKC is even on their level. They're just on a ridiculous level. And 2 things could be true. Number one, you're right. The season is not over. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know about injuries. We don't know if this Knicks team chemistry could get better. Obviously, with Mitchell Robinson coming back, OG Anunoby clearly isn't himself these last 2 games. He's tentative. He's coming back from an injury. But those 2 things make up for 40 points. They're getting blown out in these games. So on one hand, season's not over. But on the other hand, they're non-competitive against the elite teams. So like I said, they have to make up 25, 30, 40-plus points against teams like the Cavs, OKC, Boston, if you want to throw the Lakers in there.
Doesn't work that way. When you play them in May, you have to make up. It's a whole new game, bro. It starts over.
And here's the other thing, too.
Zero. What are we talking about?
And we've left this out. And this is where I think a lot of Knicks fans feel this way about this season.
Yeah.
The team from last year, and I hate doing this, but they're being compared to the team from last year.
The team this year is better than the team from last year.
I agree. This is the most
talented roster. You guys can keep arguing it.
I agree, Evan.
I still think you're wrong.
But people love the fact that that team, and I know this is what you want me to say, and you got me there, is that the team last year would spill their guts on the floor. You had to literally just rip their heart out and eat it to beat them. And there are times, especially against the top teams here, where they lay their sword down and it's over in the first quarter. And the Knicks fan wants to see them battle to the final second, even if they lose by 10.
Is that what it is? Or has the expectations changed?
The expectations are
absolutely... That's the big difference.
But the expectations for this year are also completely unrealistic to think they're going to win an NBA title this year. Completely unrealistic.
Okay. My good friend, and he is a member of the coalition, I admit that, Michael Jefferson Aloysius Paseglia, good buddy of mine, used to work here at Odyssey, put a question out on social media. He said, who would win a best-of-7 series, this year's Knicks or last year's Knicks? This year's Knicks would win in 5.
Yes.
Just to put in perspective, for anyone who wants to play this game, last year's team was better. Last year's team wasn't better. They did change, but you changed. You all changed. Because your bar was completely different a year ago as to what it is today. This team is better than last year's team. It just is. It's one of the best offensive teams the Knicks have had in their lifetime.
I cannot believe, though, that Tommy has changed to the expectations for this team.
This year?
Tommy.
NBA title is...
After the Bridges in Town Street, June, September, every Lugau, we're talking about this is the year. They're going to do damage.
No. Hold on.
Now you've flipped around the team.
That's what a way to twist that one.
Well,
they can still win an NBA title, and I believe they will in this window. You want to say it's 3 years, you want to say it's 5 years. Give me the team in the NBA based on having 2 new starters. I brought up Boston on the show before.
Tatum and Brown took multiple
chances to win an NBA title. They bring in KP. They bring in Holiday. Those 2 guys, the maturation process to get better. OKC, they've been knocking at the door. I think they're going to win an NBA title. It takes time. Role players do matter. Chemistry does matter. The expectations are higher with New York. I understand that. But to think that they were going to win an NBA title this year, and I think this is Evan's point, people giving up in February because, they're not winning an NBA title, The odds of them winning the NBA title this year were, in my opinion, on a delusional level when you consider how hard it is to win a title with all these new players.
You're going to make me into Evan now. Now I'm going to have to go back through the archives and just to prove my point. Evan, you're going to get your wish. I'm going to do a little work this week.
Good, please.
I'm going to, because I know what you said. By the way, I think what you're saying now in February 2025 is realistic. I just want to know, were they heavy? Were they heavy?
Go ahead with your dopey joke.
The goalpost you just moved.
No, I never find. If I said it, I'll own it. But find the part where at any point this year I said this team was winning the NBA title.
That's the key. Okay, I'm not doing it. This is your project, Sean.
I can't wait.
And you should go back. Lou Gowher.
These dates are going to be easy. Right after the Carl Anthony Towns, because I know what I heard.
Okay. And find the point where I said they're not winning the NBA title this year.
No,
I just said expectations of thinking they're going to win the NBA title.
I mean, you basically ruled out an NBA championship within the last 5 minutes of the show.
I won't lead us.
I mean, you just admitted it. You just said it's not happening. They were unrealistic expectations.
I said they were unrealistic expectations. Doesn't mean they're not going to happen.
It's unrealistic expectations for the Nets to win an NBA championship. Not the Knicks. You guys went out and just traded all your draft picks for players. I mean, you're trying to win.
And one more thing. You want to make the comp that it took the Celtics core forever as a young core to win a title? I'm with you. Stop using Oklahoma City as an example. Oklahoma City, it's been like the last year, 2 years, seriously, since SGA took off.
And they haven't won a title yet.
You're acting like
they haven't won a title yet. They might not even go to the finals this year. The Lakers might. Or even
Thunder haven't won anything yet. Yeah, I happen to really like them. I think most of us do.
But the Thunder had true title expectations.
I understand.
But the Celtics are a well-oiled machine that took years to build their team. The Knicks are, because I've seen this also. Oh, they've been building the team for a while. Yes, but the Knicks are still building that championship team. It might be this year they win the NBA title, but there's still that 3 to 5 year window. Oh, that we're just going to ignore that? That doesn't exist anymore?
Can I just give a follow-up to Stanton, because we touched on it?
Yeah, of course.
This is from Eric Boland, but it's via Dave Lennon. On Aaron Boone saying that Stanton went back for a personal matter to New York. It's personal in nature. It's also, quote, not related to the issue with the elbow.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. So NJ.com and the New York Post really got that one wrong. And I don't know if that was just assuming, hey, he's going back to New York. It must be related to the elbow.
Well, that is a big jump in journalism to just put two and two together about checking
that. I understand why we would assume that.
Right.
Like, if a guy is hurt and all of it, and they're not doing any baseball activities, which is what Boone has told us the last few days. If you're going back to New York, I understand making that assumption, but that is a big jump to then just say that's what's happening.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. So not related to the elbow, and Boone said, quote, I'm going to leave it at that for now.
All right. Well, we wish all the best for Giancarlo Stanton. For whatever reason, he's coming back to New York. So, Tommy, it's up to you as a diehard Knicks fan. Would you like me to give you the good news or the bad news first?
Bad news.
The bad news is, this is going to hurt Tommy more than anybody. Richard Jefferson officially will be broadcasting the NBA Finals on ABC. And I know you don't like RJ.
Well, it's not that I don't like him. I don't know him personally, but I would just say this. He takes shots at the Knicks. Richard Jefferson is a nothing in this town as far as athletics. He will not be remembered. Nobody cares.
Look at this.
He played for a team that everybody forgot about, and he just takes shots at the Knicks because he wishes he played on the Knicks.
So
that's all I'll say about
that's
it.
That's fine. That's the bad news. He'll be calling the NBA Finals. The good news is he won't be calling any Knicks games, so that's the positive. Let's go Knicks.
So Evan was being, I would say, somewhat of a nice guy in the last segment, although I still think there were seeds of a little bit of rat poison there trying to get me into a trap.
No.
Which I thought I was brilliantly avoiding. And now you come out with that bozo Richard Jefferson, and now you're taking shots.
Well, hold on. I was honest in the last segment, if you missed it, in which I told Knick fans to calm down. But I also just needed to give myself a verbal shower because I needed to cleanse myself. Like, there's a guy, and I really like him, on social media named Nick Central. I love Alex. Nick Central does the podcast with my dear friend Mike Biseglia.
Nice guy. A little self-centered, but nice guy.
Really nice guy. He just tweeted out my little kind of diatribe about the Knicks and put me over in a very uncomfortable way. Hate to give a Net fan credit. He's spot on. This is what I'm saying. And so seeing Alex agree with me put me in a spot where I needed to cleanse myself. So I made a very, joke. I made a joke at your expense. And now I feel better. Now I feel good.
That's
like
good.
I gave you guys some hope. We're good. I made my anti-Nick joke. And now we can all move on with our days.
Well, I'm glad Alex fell for it.
No, you fall for it. No, everything I said is true.
No,
I stand by everything I said.
Everything you said was true.
Yeah.
And you do stand by everything you said.
Yeah.
But there's an end game.
No, there's
end
game.
There's always an end game.
Well, the end game is hopefully they lose. I don't want them to win, unlike everyone around here who's a Knicks fan, and I respect that. I want you to lose, but I'm honest about it. I don't lie. I don't pretend and say, it's good for business. I hope you guys win. No. I hope you guys lose miserably. Though that would take money out of my pocket as a season ticket holder.
Yeah, you got the deeper they go, the more money Evan gets.
The Knicks are going to kick ass tonight. Let's get back to your calls. 888-808-1019. Let us hear from Frankie in Bethpage. Good afternoon on this fine Monday, Frankie. How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm good, Evan. How are you?
Good. Good. What's up? What's on your mind?
I'm just very frustrated with the Knicks. They can't play defense. And I'm just so sick of Kat and Josh Hart complaining to the refs. Listen, but also with the defense, how can a team with OG Anunoby, Josh Hart, Mikal Bridges, and with Tom Thibodeau as their head coach be this bad defensively? I just don't get it.
I think the biggest issue you guys have, and I wish I had an answer because I like to be the answer guy here, is that your two best players, and it's not close. I think we'd all agree their two best players are Jalen and Kat. They're liabilities defensively. And very rarely does a team who wins an NBA championship, are they anchored by their two best players not being elite defensive players? Yeah. I mean, that's the one difference when you look at Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. I mean, you can rip on them. You can compare numbers, I guess. But when you look at their all-around games, it's just completely different. And I think that's the thing that Leon Rose and Tom Thibodeau are going to have to battle over this era of Knicks basketball. Their two best players, far and away, are not just mediocre defensively, they're liabilities defensively.
Well, that's where role players come into play, and I don't want to talk about offseason, but if they don't win an NBA title this year, you bring in different role players. That's what championships teams do when they build teams. They have star players, and then they build around them. They find the best pieces. But when you have Anunoby and Bridges, who are two elite defenders on the perimeter, they shouldn't be this bad, and that's why I keep bringing up the fact that I think they're collapsing a little bit. A lot of these three-pointers are wide open. Yes, Jalen Brunson's not a good defender, but he was on the team last year, and they were better defensively.
Let's go to John in Brick, New Jersey. How are you, John?
Doing all right, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
No problem. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to bring up a little point. I'm not even a wrestling guy, Evan, but you are. You're a wrestling guy and a president's guy. You ought to be ashamed of yourself putting George Washington at the top of the Royal Rumble.
Why is that? Who should be ahead of him? Abe Lincoln because he wrestled a bunch of losers in 1860?
You ever heard of this guy called Teddy Roosevelt?
Yeah, I thought about Teddy. I thought about Teddy, the Rough Rider.
He was the original mixed martial artist, Evan. He was a guy who was a boxer, a wrestler. And when something happened, he had a boxing ring in the White House.
Yep.
And he burst a blood vessel and his eye went partially blind. So he took up judo. And, Him and George.
I want to give you my hesitation on Teddy, all right? Who, by the way, the Nationals disrespect all the time because when they do the presidential run, they always have him like lose, which doesn't make sense to me. I am partial to the guy who was around at an earlier period in time in which technology did not help them. I mean, think about what George Washington was doing. Early in his career, he was going through the woodlands of the early United States, prior to it being the United States, and he was mapping out the land. And he was dealing with people. He didn't know if they were trying to kill him or not. And he lost military battles. Then he won military battles. I mean, I kind of look at what he went through. And I say, that's why I lean towards George Washington, even over someone as tough as Teddy, who, remember, took a bullet and finished his speech, which is another example of his incredible toughness. So I think it's a great point, but I still lean George Washington. Go ahead.
I like to go to former president's boyhood homes.
This is where I think you're, first of all, it sounds like you're so much younger there. This is a very easy question. You're right on George for this reason. Who in the history of the world has ever lost a wrestling or regular fighting fight to a man named Theodore? I don't think anybody ever. I don't think there's ever been a Theodore that stepped in a ring anywhere and won anything.
Theodore Long. Did he ever wrestle before he was the SmackDown general manager?
I mean, Theodore.
Also, the other part of this presidential question, if you're just tuning in, who would win a presidential Royal Rumble? Like in history, we took all the presidents, all 45 that have served, and we put them in a Royal Rumble. What age are we getting each guy?
They're prime.
Because Ronald Reagan, as president, I love the Gipper, he was 110 years old.
No, I think they're
prime. Are we getting prime Reagan when he was younger and he was actually a Democrat?
No. Because in the Royal Rumble, they don't go, all right, let's get CM Punk and Randy Orton in their prime, whatever age they're at. So whatever age they were at as the president.
Okay.
That's where Washington will struggle because he is at the latter part of his life. Teddy was young. Teddy was in his prime as president.
But maybe George gets the number 45 draw and he's the last one in. This is why I said there's different variables.
Yeah, this is why Obama probably survives. He was so young.
Yeah, but so was Bill Clinton at the time. So was Theodore Roosevelt at the time. So was Jack Kennedy at the time.
What about Garfield?
What about him? He was young, too.
So there you go. That's your guy. I thought you would be at least have him in the final four there.
I love James Garfield as a president and a guy with ideas. I can't tell you he's going to kick everybody's ass. Do I know if Garfield's beating up Dwight Eisenhower? How do I know that?
That phone call and this segment is if somebody parodied sports radio on YouTube and made fun of him. Exactly what just happened.
Let's go to Chris in Manhattan. How are you, Chris?
Hey, guys. I want to talk about the Mets. Before that, I just wanted to give you guys a shout-out. It was great to see Al Cintron on your show. Good job. I'm a fan of Al's, and I call him a lot in the wee hours. So
yes.
Nice to see him.
Absolutely.
Listen, I'm surprised on everyone's take on Buto, and I agree with Sean. I would stretch him out, put him in the rotation ASAP. Here's my theory. He was no doubt dynamic coming in, you know, giving us three very good innings. But, that, you know, Nunez got hurt. We needed him. It was out of necessity. But the stats bear out that he needed 3 days rest all the time. And that, to me, is just not as valuable as having a starter with a bulldog mentality who I feel like is not afraid to challenge hitters. I would put Buto in the bullpen, especially this year now, if Nunez is healthy. With Minter, I'm not as concerned about that bullpen spot as I am about a solid starter.
No, I totally understand your point. I'm curious how they'll use Jose Buto. The way they used him out of the bullpen last year is he would pitch multiple innings, and then, yes, he would need 3-4 days off. But will it be more of a short relief role with him? I'm not ready to make that change unless there's another injury in the rotation. But if there's another injury in the rotation, I'd rather just write the check for Jose Quintana and bring him in as opposed to weakening your bullpen by moving Jose Buto into the rotation. Let's go to JR in Somerville. How are you, JR?
Hey, what's going on? How you doing?
What's up?
Not much. All right, I got to get ahead of your whatever you're going to say about Cat and Thibodeau because, listen, this guy... Thibodeau has to be right based on Cat's effort in the pick and roll on Sunday. Mm-hmm. All right. So Cat's allowing smaller guys to guard him. He's not stepping up in the pick and roll. I think Tommy's looking for the X's and O's part of what's going on with the Knicks rotation and how they're not able to guard the three-pointer. This guy needs to be, I don't care if you're the worst, if you're not the best defensive guy, you got to be the anchor. You got to be vocal. You got to get up there. You can't allow these guys to turn the corner and do things. And then the second thing I want to get into is Isaiah Hartenstein. All right, this guy hasn't been mentioned in the last hour about what's going on with the Knicks this year versus last year. And, this guy was literally a top 20 player in the league if you look at the analytics. And that the style of ball that they were able to play with him and the style of ball that OKC is able to play with two bigs, having him on the floor, having them do different things is
the reason. The reason we don't mention him is because he's gone.
Right.
Like, okay, if we're comparing last year's team to this year's team, Isaiah Hartenstein being on the roster is certainly a plus to 2024. There's no doubt what he brought to this team defensively and even his offensive game. But he's not on this team. Like, so it's, yeah, they miss him. Okay, great. Well, he's not here anymore. Well, he's not here, and he's not coming back. What are you going to do about it?
They also didn't trade him. He left on his own.
He
took the ban. So it's not like it's an organizational malpractice.
The
didn't trade him.
They couldn't offer him more money than what Oklahoma City offered him.
Right.
So to me, it's a past tense kind of thing. Do they miss him? Of course they do.
Yeah.
They wanted to bring him back. They couldn't. Iheart took the money, and God bless him. And he went to a better team. I mean, so it worked out well for him. He's on a better team. That's not a dig. You obviously know that.
Oh.
And he's making more money.
It hit me. I know exactly what audio to pull. You told me, if you just missed it, about a half an hour ago, Tommy said he never said the Knicks this year were a championship team, and then alluded to Oklahoma City saying, you know, they've been building to this. Of course they're more ready. When he left Iheart for Oklahoma City, I said Iheart left to a better situation to win a championship this year, and Tommy told me I was wrong.
All right. Get that audio. We'll play that tomorrow. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. I should have bent the knee to the Thunder there voice of the Knicks fan.
How much audio? Should I get 10 times that he said stuff like this?
Yes.
Do you think?
As much as you want.
For every piece of audio, he wears the L for a different day.
Okay.
All right.
I'm not going to take any shots. I want to about your basketball team, but I'm going to be the bigger man here.
Nobody cares about our
basketball. No, but this is coming from
you're rooting for us to knock out the Cavs, but that's...
All right. Well, back to the Knicks, by the way, too. There's not much they could have done at the deadline, too. Everybody's screaming about that. Mitchell Robinson was their biggest piece. And he's the guy that we need back. So there wasn't much they could do.
In fairness to the Thunder last year, they won 57 games. So on what planet were you actually saying the Knicks were a better situation than the Thunder? Like, they were good last year.
I think that I am allowed as a human to feel like, oh, I don't know, Sean with Saquon Barkley, where I feel like I lost a player that was important and I could speak as a jilted lover and irrational.
But I don't
think I'm allowed to do that.
I don't think
Sean, that's most likely where it was coming
from. I don't think Sean, as delusional as he is, ever said Saquon Barkley went to a worse situation by signing with the Eagles.
Oh, no, he would never say anything like that. He would just say that over and over again.
I didn't say that the Eagles were a worse situation than the Giants. When did I say that?
Did I say that the Knicks were a better situation, or did I say the Thunder were worse? Those are two different
things. You said the Knicks were closer to a championship, and now you're using the Thunder.
All right, well, you're paraphrasing. If you find the audio, we'll examine it.
Actually, it's been the most excited I've been for an audio deep dive in a long time.
I want everyone to set their clock. Tomorrow at 3:45, Sean will deliver whatever audio he uncovers around Tommy changing the goalposts on the next season. I do want to address, though, the Cat-Tom Thibodeau situation. And it's not about how Cat defends the pick and roll. It's about the fact that Karl-Anthony Towns appeared to suffer a knee injury yesterday. And he left. Immediately went back to the locker room to get checked on. Knicks are getting blown out. And immediately Cat comes back and re-enters the game. And the natural reaction from Knicks fans was, can you believe Tom Thibodeau? Can you believe that Tibbs actually allowed an injured Karl-Anthony Towns to return to the game? And I thought the same thing we all did. And we're all like, oh my God, this could be it. This could be the worst thing that Tom Thibodeau ever did. We later find out that Kat basically put himself back into the game. And to me, this is very simple. And I think we could all agree on this. This is not a sports talk radio argument. This is, let's all rally around the same point. Tom Thibodeau is the head coach. And while I respect that Karl-Anthony Towns is trying to show his toughness, and I do think he's a tough guy. The word soft gets thrown around a lot with him, and I understand why. I understand why the word is used. But in terms of physical toughness, in terms of playing with an injury, which I don't think is what people mean when they call him soft, it's something completely different, more style of play.
Yes.
Cat is a tough guy. And I respect the hell out of the fact that on national TV, on a Sunday afternoon with his team fighting, he wanted to fight with them. I do. I respect it. But if you're Tom Thibodeau, you put your body in front of him and you say, I'm the boss. I run the show. I'm not talking about our show, by the way. I'm talking about Tom Thibodeau.
No, yeah, the Knicks show.
Yeah. You're not coming in the game.
Yeah.
If you want to run me over and make a scene of it here on ABC, that's fine. But I'm not letting you back in the game. And I do think that falls at the feet of Tom Thibodeau.
Of course it is. And if you somehow got blindsided and didn't see him stand up in front of you and go check in, then I immediately call a timeout the next time I have the ball and make sure he doesn't go back.
Yes, and I say, get your ass out of here.
Right.
What do you think you're doing? So that's my criticism. Is that a fair criticism, Tommy?
No, because there was a game. Well, because Tibbs doesn't work that way, because there was a game.
He lets his players run the show?
Yeah, or he just agrees with going back in the game.
He can't agree with that. The guy, it looked like he got seriously hurt. They still don't even know how hurt he is.
The game after they lost to Oklahoma City in Oklahoma City, the next night in Chicago, there was like a minute and a half left in the game. Cat was hobbled. They had him run. There was a minute and a half left. They didn't call a timeout to get him out of there. He ran down the court. I thought his season was over. That's just the way they operate. And
Cat's wrong.
I agree with that part of it.
That's what I'm saying.
But that is their fundamental philosophy.
They're wrong.
Is that they, I agree with you.
That's all you got to say.
I agree with you.
Leave it at that.
But here's what I would say.
What?
I can't express this enough. If you're listening out there, this is Tommy Lugar. I'm a Knicks fan. This is not a safe place for me today. This is not a safe place for me. I am feeling attacked by two people.
I'm defending you.
No, you're not.
You're a strong three seed.
Yeah.
You don't have the
I
heart,
won't
heart
lead
like
us.
St.
Shut
John's
up, negative Tommy. I don't need to hear from him either.
No one will lead us.
All right.
Send help.